What about you two? He asked.
I bloomed many, 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 Rig added, and then lowered his head when Bobby glared at him. Yeah, well, you ain't no spring chicken yourself there, Mr. Beckworth, Bobby reminded him, and then said to Mason, I'm 49 plus one, and Rig here is 48, and I'm still having a hard time believing you are that old, he said doubtfully. I have the documentation to prove it, Mason assured him. And 33 is not that old, he said, and then popped a piece of bacon in his mouth. Are you two here on vacation? Yes, but why anyone would want to come to Florida in the middle of summer is beyond me, Bobby grumbled, and shot a glare at Rig. Rig gave him a tolerant smile, and continued to eat his breakfast. Where do you live? New York, Rig said, around a bite of egg. The three of them talked about New York City. They kept the topic on food, shopping, and art centers, as well as the insane traffic and crowded sidewalks. Mason had always wished to see a big city like New York, San Francisco, or Chicago, but knew it would never happen. The number of people alone made it an impossibility. Thankfully, the conversation didn't steer back to Mason as they finished their breakfast and the two older men helped him clean up the kitchen. But it was a short reprieve. Thank you for breakfast and helping me clean up, Mason said sincerely as he put the last dish away. And yeah, and for being there for me last night. I really appreciate it, but I have some chores to take care of and, yeah, well, thanks. Mason shrugged and started to move toward the front door, hoping the two would get the hint and follow him. The note said you have no friends or family, Bobby said gently.
I'll be fine, really,
he assured them, and opened the front door.
I'll call my family doctor and get checked out, but honestly, I'm fine.
It's Sunday, Mason, Rig said, stepping up close. He stopped before he moved out the door and stood directly in front of Mason.
We can give you a ride to the hospital. Have you checked out?
For a hangover? Mason balked and took a half step back. Mason, you were in a very bad place when we found you, Rig said grimly. We can't just leave you here alone. He's right, Bobby added, coming up to stand next to Rig. We probably should have taken you last night. I wasn't thinking clearly, and I apologize for that. Mason tilted his head back and stared at the ceiling for a long moment, doing his best to come up with something to say that would convince them he really was fine. Actually, fine probably wasn't the best word choice, but he was better, and that was something to grasp onto. He'd reached a turning point the night before, and he was still standing, still breathing, and that was more than he'd thought he could do. He held his breath for a heartbeat before letting it out and lowering his head to meet their concerned gazes. Again, I apologize for putting you through that last night. It was unfair, and I'm really, really sorry. But I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, I'm not going to off myself. Mason rubbed at his tired eyes and huffed out a breath. You don't know me, so I'm not sure how I can convince you that I'm being sincere, but I promise to lock up all the pills and hide all the sharp objects. What about later, tomorrow, or the day after that? Rig asked. What about when you're alone again and...
Rig began shaking his head vigorously.
I'm sorry, Mason, but my conscience just won't allow me to leave you alone. I'm sure the mental health agency has a number we can call, somewhere we can take you so you can talk to someone.
Mason threw up his hands in defeat and stomped over to the couch and threw himself on it. He ran his hands over his face and tired eyes again. He hadn't been awake long, but the alcohol-induced sleep hadn't been what he'd call restful, and not nearly long enough to recharge his battery.
I'm not going to check into some 72-hour therapeutizing program when I don't need it.
Rig opened his mouth to say something, but Mason held up a hand, and Rig snapped his mouth closed.
Yes, 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 I get it. I did something really fucking stupid last night, he admitted. But I wasn't a complete idiot. I didn't go through with it. It changed my mind.
He looked at them pleadingly as they joined him. Rig took the recliner across from him sitting on the edge, forearms on his knee, hands clasped, and Bobby sat stiffly at the other end of the couch. Obviously, they had no intentions of leaving and giving Mason some peace.
"What can I do to convince you that doesn't involve a trip to the psych ward?" he implored.
"Why are you so against talking to someone?" Bobby asked. "There's nothing wrong in asking someone for help, and there's no shame in talking to a psychiatrist."
Mason squeezed his eyes shut and pinched the bridge of his nose as the throb in his head flared painfully.
"I don't have anything against psychiatrists. I've seen enough of them."
"You've tried this before?"
Rig asked in horror.
"No,"
Mason said adamantly.
"I've never been depressed. I've always been a pretty happy-go-lucky guy for the most part. But you know what? Having your fucking whole life ripped away from you in the blink of an eye, having to fight people you don't even fucking know to make sure the last wishes of someone you love are granted and lose, and having your other lover's ashes sitting on your fucking kitchen table, that does shit to a man,"
Mason shouted angrily. The anger propelled him up and off the couch. He needed to move. He was shaking so hard, pulse speeding. Mason paced, his infuriation evident in each heavy footfall as he stomped in the small space of his living room, arms flailing around wildly as he continued to voice his fury.
"I fucked up. I made a goddamn mistake. But given the circumstance, I think I was entitled to a meltdown. I had my pity party. I deserved it. And I took it too fucking far. But I didn't do it. I wouldn't do it. I won't do it,"
he screamed. Mason continued to stomp and scream and rage. Rig moved from a relaxed stance to instant rigid tension as Mason screamed. Rig's fingers curled against the leather of the recliner, his knuckles white with the effort to keep himself in the chair. The deep scowl on the man's face told Bobby his partner was having as difficult of a time as he was to sit quietly and not wrap Mason up in a hug or say something that would make this whole situation better. But there were no words that would help, and nothing they could do that would make it so. They sat there, watching him silently, helplessly, until Mason ran out of steam and fell back onto the couch, breathing harshly and hung his head. Rig stood, and Bobby looked up at him questioningly, but he just shook his head and headed to the kitchen without a word. After another long moment of watching Mason struggle to compose himself, Bobby couldn't stand it. He moved closer to the man. He wanted, desperately, to hold Mason, give him a strong shoulder to lean on. But Bobby clenched his hand into a fist to stop from reaching out and touching him. Instead, he sat close, quietly letting Mason know he wasn't alone.
"I really am okay," Mason murmured hoarsely. "I know it didn't sound like it just now, but I honestly am."
He fidgeted with the hem of his shorts, picking at a loose thread.
"I'm just full of surprises today,"
he said with a sad-sounding chuckle.
"What do you mean?"
Rig came back in before Mason could answer and handed him a glass of water. Mason looked up at him with a slight smile and accepted the glass, thanking him. Rig sat back down in the recliner again. He was still tense, and Bobby could see the muscles bulging in his neck, but he no longer had that wild, hopeless look in his eyes. Mason took a few sips of water before setting it on the coffee table and turning slightly to face Bobby.
"I don't normally talk to strangers very well, and I try to avoid getting that worked up since it usually sends me into a panic attack."
"Is that what you saw the psychiatrist for? The panic attacks?"
Bobby asked gently.
Mason nodded. "They started when I was a kid, and they got really bad after I left home. Could barely make it through the day without at least one to some degree. They weren't always like full-blown attacks. Some I could manage on my own. Anyway, I went to therapy for years even after I met Gregory and Charles, but it didn't really help. The psychiatrist always seemed to be more interested in other things," he said sheepishly.
Bobby cocked his head in confusion.
"What do you mean, other things?"
"Well, when I was young, my mom and the doctors she sent me to were more concerned about the fact that I didn't seem to like girls and
was a little too feminine. Mason made quotation marks with his fingers. For a boy. I spent many, many hours sitting in a chair as a therapist tried to cure me of my gay disease. Mason rolled his eyes before continuing. Gregory and Charles talked me into going back to therapy, and it did help for a while. But eventually it got to the point where each week we spent more time talking about why I let men hit me and liked being on my knees instead of the panic attacks.
And you quit going before they help with the attacks?
Rig asked dubiously. Mason made a clucking sound with his tongue and shrugged. Gregory and Charles helped me more than a shrink. They grounded me, and as long as I didn't get in stressful situations or go out in a big crowd, I was fine. They learned how to talk me down from one and made sure I was never left alone. Hell, I hadn't had a full-blown attack in ages. My first one was at the grave. Mason snapped his mouth shut and closed his eyes as if he were trying not to think about that day. When he opened them again, there was so much misery. Bobby knew Mason hadn't been able to push away the images, and Bobby's heart broke all over again for the man. Mason made an effort to give Bobby a smile, but he couldn't keep the sadness out of it. Anger, so bright and so intense, flared up in Bobby. The heat of it robbed him of voice and breath. He was lucky he was sitting, or the force of it would have knocked him on his ass. He wanted to tell Mason his doms had done him wrong. They'd done a great injustice to their submissive, whom they had sworn to care for and protect. When they accepted Mason's gift of submission, and they placed their collar around his neck, it was a promise that Mason could trust they would see to all his needs, and they fucking failed him. Rig was back to clenching the arms of the chair, leaning forward and staring at Mason with wide, blazing eyes. He'd heard it too. The flush in his cheeks and the clenched jaw were obvious signs Rig was struggling to keep his comments to himself. Rig, just like Bobby, knew it would do no one any good to speak ill of the dead and would only serve to hurt Mason further. But for fuck's sakes, what had these men been thinking? Hiding Mason away. Instead of just protecting him, they should have been helping him grow and overcome the obstacles holding him back. One therapist may not be able to help, but damn it, you don't just give up. You find another who will listen, who does understand your life, or lifestyle. The thought popped into his head, and a plan formed. Mason, have you ever talked to a therapist that understood your lifestyle? Bobby asked suddenly and placed a hand on Mason's shoulder. Mason frowned slightly and shook his head.
I don't think so. That's not something you ask them when checking credentials.
You know, we can't just walk away and leave you alone unless we are 100% sure you're going to be okay.
But
I have a dear friend who is a psychiatrist and just happens to be a dom. Your choice. You talk to him or we call the police and have you committed for 72 hours.
Mason narrowed his eyes at Bobby.
You wouldn't dare, he hissed.
Rig pulled the note he'd stashed in his pocket out and waved it at Mason.
Oh, yes, we would.
That's blackmail, Mason complained.
I'm okay with that, Bobby said unapologetically.
Mason's eyes flicked back and forth between Bobby and Rig several times. He obviously realized how serious they were, and he really didn't have much of a choice, because after a moment, he flopped back against the couch and crossed his arms over his chest.
Fine. Call your friend.
Bobby smiled triumphantly, and the smile on his partner's face was just as broad. Now to get Max to agree to come on such a short notice, he'd be calling in all his favors on this one. Chapter 8. Rig hurriedly tromped down the wooden stairs from Mason's house. He needed a shower in the worst kind of way, and a toothbrush. As soon as he stepped off the last step, he jogged toward the path and through the trees. Rig wasn't real comfortable leaving Bobby alone again, not that he worried that Mason would hurt his partner. Still, Rig had waited until the man fell asleep on the couch. After the last emotional outburst from Mason, It would be unfair to make Bobby have to deal with another one on his own. A quick call to Max, an even quicker shower, and he'd be back in no time. As soon as he unlocked the door to their bungalow, Rig kicked his shoes off and threw the keys on the counter on the way to the bedroom. He grabbed his cell from the bedside table and dialed Max's private number. As soon as it began to ring, he started pulling clean clothes out of the dresser.
Rig!
Max's deep baritone voice sounded genuinely surprised.
Good to hear from you. You still in Florida, or did you cut your vacation short?
Hey, Max. No, we're still down here and Bobby is still bitching about the heat, he said teasingly. He cradled the phone beneath his ear and shoulder, grabbed his shower kit from the closet, and added it to the armful of clothes.
Oh, Bobby, Max chuckled into the phone before his tone turned serious. Everything okay?
Rig rarely called Max. They were friends, good friends, but they weren't as close as Max and Bobby were. And besides, Rig hated chatting on the phone, so Max's question wasn't unusual. Rig dumped his clothes on the bathroom counter and headed back to the bedroom to sit on the edge of the bed.
We've run into a bit of a problem, he said, running a hand through his hair.
What happened?
Max asked in an alarmed tone.
Is Bobby okay?
Yeah, he's fine, but we met a young man who's not, he explained.
Rig spent the next several minutes recounting how they had found Mason passed out drunk, the note, and the outbursts. Through it all, Max stayed silent. The only noise coming through the phone line was the muffled noise of Max tapping his finger, a habit he had when listening. Once he had all the events laid out leading up to Rig's call, he finally asked,
So, Bobby was hoping you would be able to talk to him. It's either that or we're going to have him involuntarily admitted. We can't just leave him alone.
Has he agreed to talk to me?
He said he would, Rig assured him. He doesn't put a lot of faith in therapists. Said they always want to talk either about the fact that he's gay or trying to tell him he needs to stop submitting. So he's willing to try and talk things out with you, since you don't have an issue with either of those beautiful traits.
Not even a little bit, Max snorted. I think those are fine, fine qualities to have in a man.
So you'll talk to him? Rig asked again.
I have to make a few calls, do a bit of rearranging of my schedule, but I can fly out later this afternoon, Max said.
You're coming down? Rig asked, stunned.
We can't ask you to do that. We thought if you could maybe talk to him over the phone.
You didn't ask. I offered and I'm good, Max chuckled.
But even I'm going to need more than a phone call to determine if this poor guy is a threat to himself.
But,
gotta run, Max said, cutting off any further protest from Rig. I'll call you as soon as I know what time my flight gets in, and Rig?
Yeah?
You two did the right thing by not leaving him alone and calling me. Talk too soon.
The connection went dead, and Rig stared at it, still astonished at what had just taken place. Max was willing to drop everything on a dime and fly to Florida for a stranger? Rig flipped his phone shut and set it back on the bedside table. He'd have to make sure he made the trip worth Max's time. He doubted Max would allow him to pay for the therapy he'd be doing with Mason. Hell, he probably wouldn't even let him pay for the trip. He heaved himself up off the bed and headed in to take a shower and get back to Bobby and Mason. He had some time to come up with something he could do for Max in return. Maybe a trip to see Jonas and his house of custom leather and unusual toys would be in order when he and Bobby returned to New York. Rig smiled as he set the taps. Fuck, he and Bobby had the greatest friends. He shucked his clothes and entered the shower, still grinning as he thought about Max and his penchant for unusual toys. No way would he turn down a gift that was custom-made just for him. Mason was still sleeping when Rig returned from their bungalow. Bobby silently waved him toward the kitchen, not wanting to wake Mason.
Is he going to talk to him? Bobby asked,
keeping his voice low. Rig leaned back against the counter and nodded. Yeah. The shrill chirping sound of Rig's cell phone interrupted him, and he scrambled to pull it out of his pocket, cursing low when it got stuck. He finally pulled it free with a huff and flipped it open. Hello? Bobby peeked around the corner to find Mason shifting on the couch, but he settled back and didn't open his eyes. Every time he looked at Mason, warmth filled Bobby as the need to protect, comfort, and care for the smaller man kicked in. Mason had been through so much in his life, had so many obstacles ahead of him. Bobby just wanted to be able to remove at least one, or at the very least, give him a steadying hand as he climbed over one. He continued to stare at the sleeping man, not really paying much attention to the hushed tones behind him until he heard Rig say, "Okay, see you then," and the click of Rig's phone being shut. Bobby spun around and faced his partner.
"What do you mean, see you then?"
"Max will be here at 10,
Rig said with a wry grin.
"Are you serious? Jesus, Rig. I just wanted you to ask him to talk to Mason on the phone, not drop his whole life and fly down here."
Rig shrugged, still grinning.
"That's what I told him. Well, not in those exact words, but close. He basically said we were idiots."
Bobby frowned.
"Why? Did you tell him the whole story?"
"Of course I did," Rig grunted and waved him off. "I even told him about Mason's mistrust of Max's fellow docs. I'm not a complete fool, you know."
Bobby moved up close and grabbed Rig's waist, curling his hands in the soft cotton of his t-shirt. Bobby placed a soft kiss to the side of Rig's neck, taking in the scent of the sandalwood shampoo he'd used in his still damp hair and on his warm skin beneath Bobby's lips.
"You sure about that?"
Bobby asked and kissed him again. A shudder went through Rig, and he wrapped his arms around Bobby, running his hands down from Bobby's shoulders to the top of his ass, then smacked it lightly, making Bobby press his face harder into Rig's neck to muffle the sound of his laughter.
"It's debatable. After all, I have stayed with you all these years." "That's one of the smarter things you've done in your life," Bobby assured him. "But that still doesn't answer my question. Why does Max think we are idiots? Did we do the wrong thing?"
He laid his head on Rig's shoulder, needing the contact, to feel the strength Rig represented, to help balance the worry he felt for Mason.
"No, he actually said we did good. But as wonderful as we think he is, or as cocky as that son of a bitch is, he said even he can't be sure Mason isn't a danger to himself with just one phone conversation. I think I may have just stroked his already out of control ego."
"And so he does what?" Bobby asked, lifting his head to meet Rig's eyes. "He just jumps on a plane to come help someone he doesn't even know."
"Nope."
Bobby tilted his head, suspicious of the sparkle in Rig's eyes. Rig just chuckled and kissed him on the nose before saying,
"He's doing this for us, and I'm thinking a trip to Jonas's is going to be in our near future."
"He'll deserve it, that's for sure,"
Bobby agreed, and laid his head back down on Rig's shoulder. He was clinging, not something he normally did, but he couldn't help it. Not only had it been difficult seeing so much anguish in Mason, it had brought his own pain and loss up from a slight throb to a full-blown, heartbreaking ache.
"You okay?"
Rig asked and hugged him tighter.
"I'm just tired,"
he admitted. It wasn't a lie. He was tired in his bones, in his head, and in his heart.
"How about you? Did you get any sleep last night?"
"I'm good. Why don't you go take a nap with Mason?" Rig encouraged. "It's going to be another long night."
Bobby patted Rig's chest before pulling free.
"I think I'd rather keep myself busy."
He didn't want to close his eyes and see the beautiful face long lost to him.
"I'm going to go take a shower before Mason gets up. Figure out what we're going to have for supper. I'll put on a pot of coffee before I go."
Rig grabbed his hand as Bobby reached for the can of coffee Rig had brought over with the breakfast foods, stopping him.
I can do it.
Rig looked him up and down and then sighed.
Go shower. You look like hell.
Bobby started to protest, but his entire body ached from head to toe, and his thoughts were a jumbled mess of anger and despair. He simply couldn't find it in him to argue.
You'll be okay?
Jesus, you sound like a mother hen, Rig grumbled. Will you just go before I have to bend you over my knee and remind you just who I am? I got this.
That'll be the day,
he snorted in indignation, but turned and silently made his way to the front door. He paused to look back at Mason, at the even rise and fall of his chest and the peaceful look on his face. Bobby looked back up at Rig, who was leaning against the wall to the kitchen. He glared back at Bobby and pointed, a low rumbling warning sound emitting from him. Bobby rolled his eyes, turned, and stepped out, shutting the door behind him. The sun was bright in the perfectly blue, cloudless sky, and Bobby shielded his eyes from the harsh glare. He could hear the roll of the tide, and somewhere in the distance, he heard children laughing, a dog barking. He reached up to pull down his shades, but they weren't on his head. His footsteps faltered when he remembered it had been dark when he'd made his way here the last time. The darkness had followed him into the little house and stayed with him. Now, the gorgeous, bright day was so out of sorts, it momentarily shocked him. A wave of vertigo rattled Bobby's head, and his feet froze in their tracks. After all the dark, ugly things they'd all encountered overnight, and throughout the morning, the afternoon with its bright sun and laughing children seemed wrong. The world had just kept right on spinning, oblivious to what he, Rig, and Mason had been forced to face behind the closed doors and drawn window shades. But that was the way of it, wasn't it? He'd learned that after Stephen died. People went on. They went to work, ate, played, breathed, lived. Even when you stood before them, right there in front of them, dead, they just fucking went on. And eventually, you did too, because life didn't wait. It just kept on going and going, clicking one moment off the clock after another. Sometimes, you could walk among them. Hell, you could even manage to begin to live with them and find happiness for a while. But once you felt death, once you've had someone who meant the world to you, who you loved and lived for, snatched away in one cruel twist of fate, the darkness that had been buried deep within always came back to visit. It was a constant just as sure and steady as the clicking seconds of time. Bobby looked back at the house where a big piece of his heart was and a broken boy laid, and it hit him that the good and the bad went hand in hand, and in order to truly live, to understand if only for a moment what it meant to be human, one had to experience both. His own experience with that ugly side of life was what brought him here, what compelled him to check on Mason, and it would hopefully give him the power and the understanding to help Mason start living again when it seemed hopeless. He got his feet moving again and sprinted down the stairs and onto the tree-lined path. Maybe some good would finally come from Stephen's death. Bobby was out of breath when he pushed open the door to the bungalow. He wasn't in the best shape. He'd gotten complacent the last few years. Okay, he had gotten a little lazy and cooked a little too much, but damn it. He pushed the door closed and just barely contained the urge to roll his eyes at himself. He had no excuse but pure laziness for the lack of stamina and pudge around his midsection. As he made his way through the house, he began to chuckle. He wasn't the only one who hadn't liked the idea of leaving Mason and had been in a big hurry to get back. The door hadn't been closed all the way in Rig's haste to leave, and each room had more telltale signs. The paper that had been on the coffee table was scattered across the floor of the living room. In the bedroom, clothes hung from open drawers, and still others were strewn across the bed. He burst out laughing when he entered the bathroom. There were wet towels on the floor, Rig's shaving kit, and all its contents spread out on the counter, and he hadn't even taken the time to let the water out of the sink where he'd apparently been shaving. Rig wasn't a complete and utter neat freak like Bobby was, whose motto was a place for everything and everything in its place. However, Rig wasn't normally quite this bad. The disarray was proof of just how out of sorts and panicked the man was. Bobby didn't blame him in the slightest. He didn't even bother with trying to put things to right. Instead, he took a shower in record time and padded to the bedroom, still dripping wet and drying as he went. He struggled to pull on a pair of tan cargo shorts and a green t-shirt, the material sticking to his wet skin, and he cursed when he realized he'd put the damn shirt on backward. Bobby tilted his head back and stared up at the ceiling and took a couple calming breaths before readjusting the shirt and stomping off to the kitchen, still drying his wet curls. After rummaging through the cupboards and fridge, he found enough ingredients to make a simple meal of spaghetti, and he piled them in a tote bag, grabbed his keys, and left, making sure to pull the door shut behind him and check that it was locked.
"Motherfucker!"
he bellowed when he stepped off the porch and his bare feet sunk into the hot sand.
"Ow, shit! Ow! You have got to be kidding me!"
he groaned and dashed for the porch and the cool, shaded wood to bring some relief to the burnt underside of his feet. Unlocking the door, this time he didn't even try to hold it back and rolled his eyes at himself as he slipped into his shoes.
"All right, old man, calm the hell down. Do we have everything this time?"
he asked himself aloud. He was dressed, although he looked as if he'd showered in his clothes, shoes on, dinner makings in hand, keys. He spotted his wallet sitting next to Riggs, grabbed them both, shoved them into the side pockets of his shorts, and stepped out again, closing and locking the door behind him, this time with everything and no chance of cooking his feet. Chapter 9. Grant Maxwell, or Max, as he'd been introduced, sat across the kitchen table from Mason with a large smile on his face, showing off rows of perfectly straight and bright white teeth. The expression on the man's face was open and warm as he continued to ask benign questions about Mason's job, hobbies, and how he liked the weather this time of year. Mason couldn't help but shrink just a bit into himself. Max was one hell of an imposing figure. Dark brows, brown eyes, much darker than Mason's own chocolate brown. So brown, in fact, they were nearly black. This close, Mason could see the man had recently shaved, but it looked as if he had a perpetual 5 o'clock shadow on his strong jaw and cleft chin. Max's black hair was shaved close, and he was big, like 6'3" or 6'4", broad shoulders, and kind of huge chest. His biceps bulged, stretching the sleeves of his plain white t-shirt. Mason had met many men throughout his life he'd instantly had been able to identify as dominant. But Max not only screamed dominance, respect, and power, he commanded a room by his very presence.
"When did you begin to have suicidal thoughts?"
Max asked. Guess the simple questions were over. Mason shifted in his chair and picked at the label on his soda bottle.
"About 2 days ago,"
he answered without looking up.
"And how long ago was it your Dom's died?"
Max asked gently.
"Just over a month,"
he gasped, as a jolt of pain hit him in the chest. He hated reliving this over and over.
"And their death is what precipitated the suicide attempt?"
"It wasn't an attempt," he said adamantly.
"Okay, I apologize. The thought of suicide,"
Max corrected.
"I thought about it for a couple of days,
seemed like the only way I could stop the pain, but I didn't do it.
Mason shifted again and began bouncing his leg as the unease surged through him.
I thought about it, but I didn't attempt it.
He was proud of how strong his voice sounded, considering he felt so weak inside.
Do you still feel like you want to hurt yourself?
Mason looked up and met Max's dark eyes briefly before lowering them to concentrate on the soda bottle again, before answering,
No.
You said you got drunk last night, trying to build up the courage to go through with your plan. Do you drink often?
Mason shook his head.
Have you ever felt you needed to cut down on your drinking?
Again, Mason shook his head.
Have people annoyed you by criticizing your drinking?
Mason huffed out a breath and looked up.
Mr. Maxwell, no disrespect, but I'm not an alcoholic. I drink maybe once or twice a year, but never to get drunk. Nor am I a drug addict. I've never once taken an illegal drug. I've only taken prescription narcotics twice in my life.
He leaned forward in his seat and held up his hand and counted them off on his fingers.
Once, when I broke my leg as a teenager, and the second time was when I had my appendix cut out. The only thing I have ever been addicted to was the high Gregory and Charles could give me, and now...
The burst of irritation seeped out of Mason as he remembered how his doms could make him sore, so high, so fucking beautiful.
And he slumped back in his chair.
Mason found it odd that Max didn't keep notes. He kept his eyes on Mason the entire time, listening intently. Even when Mason kept his head down, he could feel them on him. It was both unnerving and refreshing. Most people didn't listen, too busy texting, talking, or doing 100 other things that distracted them from really hearing. Max listened.
Sounds like you had a good relationship,
Max said, tenderness in his voice that seemed at odds with this large, imposing man.
The best, Mason replied without hesitation. I'm not saying that now because they are gone. I'm saying it because it's true. Sure, we had our little fights, more like arguments, really, but we worked. The three of us just worked so well together, and we were happy.
I can see that by the way you talk about them. That's rare to find. You are a very lucky man to have experienced that in your life. You do realize that, don't you?
Yes, Mason murmured.
Of course he knew it. And while he may have been one of those rare lucky bastards who had found true happiness, it hurt all the more knowing what he'd lost and that he'd probably never experience it again. Max tapped a finger on the table as he stared at Mason, his expression thoughtful.
You mentioned you'd seen a therapist before. Was it ever for depression?
No. I would have figured Bobby and Rig would have already filled you in on my past history.
Max's lip quirked up into a slight grin.
They did. I just wanted to hear from you.
And now you've heard it.
A throb began to pound in Mason's temples, and he rubbed at them, then ran his fingers through his hair and leaned on his elbows to stare at the table.
Are we done now? I'd like to take a shower and unpack my belongings.
All I need is for you to promise that you won't hurt yourself for the next 24 hours and agree to talk to me tomorrow.
About what?
Mason muttered.
Fuck, he was tired. The kind of tired that was bone deep. The kind no amount of sleep could fix.
The only way he was going to make it without his grief sending him to a padded cell was by taking it one day at a time. He didn't want to think about tomorrow just yet. He knew what he had to do today. Wasn't that enough for now?
You've been through a lot, and your emotions are still all over the place. I just want to make sure you have someone to talk to about them,
Max said, his voice low and soothing, as if he were speaking with a scared and wounded animal. It was an accurate description for the way Mason was feeling.
What the hell are they doing in there?
Bobby grumbled as he paced the front porch.
They've been in there for over an hour.
Rig looked up from the magazine he'd been reading, a patient look on his face.
My guess would be talking.
Bobby stuck his tongue out at the infuriating bastard and kept stomping along the wooden planks.
Aren't you the least bit curious?
Sure I am, but it's not like Max would tell us anyway. Ever heard of doctor-patient confidentiality?
I know, Bobby muttered, and ran his hands through his sweat-dampened hair. Damn Florida humidity. I just want to know if he's okay, that he's not...
Bobby came to a halt in front of Rick.
What if he decides death is the better option? What if we don't find him in time? What if...
Stop!
Rick demanded. He went to his feet and cupped Bobby's chin. If Max thinks he's a danger to himself or anyone else, he'll have him committed. You know this. You know Max will do everything in his power to help Mason. So stop worrying, please?
It just breaks my heart.
Bobby sighed and laid his forehead against Rig's shoulder, wrapping an arm around his waist.
I know.
Rig responded lightly and ran a soothing hand down Bobby's back.
Brings back a lot of very painful emotions. But I want you to look on the bright side of this.
There is a bright side to reliving a death? Watching someone struggling and rage from the same kind of pain? There is no bright side, Rig.
It doesn't seem like it right now, but who better to help Mason understand what he's going through than someone, you and I, who have been where he's at, have endured and survived the pain of it?
Rig was right. Who better to understand than he and Rig? But fuck, this was hard.
Bobby held on to Rig for a while longer, until the trembling eased a little, and then he lifted his head.
Still doesn't seem fair, he said sadly.
It's not,
Rig agreed, and pushed Bobby's bangs away from his forehead and kissed it.
But we can be there for him, just like you were there for me.
And you for me,
Bobby said, giving Rig a sad smile and a pat before he released Rig and returned to his pacing. Crap. He was becoming an emotional mess, and he needed to get his shit together. Rig hit it better than Bobby did, but he couldn't hide the pain in his eyes or the sadness in his voice. They'd made it through this once. Together, they could do it again. At the end of the porch, he stopped and grabbed the railing, dropping his head between his arms and taking several deep, calming breaths. Sweat rolled down his neck, and the slight breeze caused him to shiver, even in the ungodly heat. He squeezed his eyes shut tightly and forced himself to focus on the here and now, what he needed to do to help both Rig and Mason get through this, instead of focusing on his own pain and living in the past. He sucked in one more deep breath, blew it out slowly, and opened his eyes. He could do this. Bobby pushed off the railing, and just as he turned, Max came out the front door.
Well?
Bobby asked, rushing to Max.
Oh, thanks for asking. I'll have a glass of sweet tea if you've got it,
Max said nonchalantly. Bobby glared at Rig when he chuckled.
Max, just tell me how he is.
He's fine. I believe young Mason is getting in the shower as we speak. Now can I have that glass of tea? This heat is horrendous,
he complained, and wiped the back of his hand across his brow. Panic raced down Bobby's spine, his gut rolling, and he barely was able to bite out.
You left him alone? In the shower?
His voice rose as he thought about all the things in the bathroom that Mason could use to hurt himself.
Pills. Oh, shit. Razors?
He groaned. Bobby shoved at Max, trying to get to the door, but Max grabbed his wrist tightly.
Whoa there, and lower your voice.
Bobby tried to tug away, but Max's grip was unyielding.
Max, I have to get to him.
Max spoke over him.
Do you honestly think I would allow him to be alone if I thought he'd hurt himself?
Bobby shifted his gaze between Max and the door, adrenaline still pumping quickly through his system, sending his pulse soaring.
Come on, buddy.
You know me better than that,
Max added, a hint of annoyance and hurt in equal parts laced his tone. Bobby's shoulders slumped, and he guiltily met Max's gaze.
Yeah, I know you better than that. I'm sorry.
Max patted Bobby's shoulder and released his wrist.
He's unsure of himself. He's heartbroken, and he's scared. But I honestly don't believe he's suicidal. If he is, then that man deserves an Academy Award.
Then,
Bobby, we'll give him a reasonable amount of time. And if he's not out, you can storm the gates. Deal? Max asked with a small smirk and a questioning tilt to his head.
Fine,
Bobby grumped. Max better be right on this, or he was so going to beat the shit out of him.
Now that that is so, can I, for the love of God, get something to drink?
Max asked, and dramatically grasped his throat.
I'll get it,
Rig offered, and hefted himself back up out of the chair. You want something too? He asked Bobby, as he pecked him on the cheek when he walked by.
I could use a stiff one, Bobby murmured, and dropped down into the chair Rig had just exited.
I got that right here, baby.
Rig leered and grabbed his crotch and groped it obscenely. Bobby flipped him off, and Max laughed and took the seat to Bobby's right.
So you think he's really going to be okay? Bobby asked. I know you can't give me the specifics, but I just need to know that he's going to be okay. I mean, fuck, Max. How the hell is this kid going to get the help he needs if he's afraid to leave his house?
He's got a hell of a road ahead of him, I'll give you that.
Max ran a hand through his hair and then wrinkled his nose as he shook his wet hand.
Well, I don't think he's in immediate danger. You were right to be upset about his social anxiety. It was irresponsible of his doms not to have made sure he had the proper counseling.
Bobby nodded, the tendril of anger beginning to curl in his belly.
They were idiots! The stupid fuckers should have kept looking until they found the right therapist for him. They left that poor man alone,
he hissed, pointing angrily in the direction of where Mason would be.
This is their damn fault.
Max tapped a finger against the arm of his chair, his expression one of placidity, as Bobby continued to tremble with rage. How could he not be angry? How the hell could Max sit there so fucking calm in the face of the injustice that had been done to Mason? Bobby looked at Max with incredulity. Max was an old and dear friend, but at the moment, he wanted to throttle the bastard. Bobby crossed his arms over his chest and huffed out an annoyed breath.
Are you quite finished?
Max asked, in what Bobby recognized as his professional intonation, which did little to help with Bobby's anger, and he ignored the question.
Look,
Max continued after a long moment when Bobby still didn't answer.
Well, I may agree wholeheartedly with you. Mason is not going to appreciate your rant. If you want to help that kid, the best thing for you to do is to be there when he needs a friend and listen.
Just pisses me off, Bobby grumbled.
I get that, but you going around disrespecting his dead lovers will only hurt him further. He loved them.
He knows that, and will do the right thing, Rig said confidently as he joined them again with a glass of tea and two bottles of water.
Thank you,
Bobby said, accepted the water, opened it, and drank half of it.
Bobby is just upset,
Rig continued, and took the empty seat on the other side of Bobby.
It's been a rough night.
And he may rant and rave to you and me, but he'd never say those things in front of Mason.
I know,
Max agreed.
But when ranting, can you keep your voice down to a low roar?
He asked slyly.
I'll do my best, Bobby said, and rolled the cold bottle along his brow and then down his face to his neck. Now that that is settled, someone want to do something about this damn heat?
Chapter 10. Max had been right. Of course he was. Max was always right. After Mason's first therapy session, Mason spent the rest of the evening putting away the belongings he'd packed into boxes. The walls of Mason's small bungalow were now covered in brightly colored abstract paintings. Rig was surprised to discover that Mason had painted them. They were so vibrant and full of life. In fact, all the personal touches, pillows, throws, sculptures, candles in their holders, as well as all the other odds and ends around the place, were bright and lively in shades of red, orange, yellow, and gold. A sharp contrast to the somber man who'd created or purchased them. Rig ran his finger over the strange, bright red sculpture of a bent wrist, the hand palm up toward the ceiling. The high gloss paint was smooth against the pad of his finger, and he couldn't help but wonder what Mason had been thinking when he had bought it. Mason had said he was the decorator and had done most of the shopping online. Had he smiled when he saw it? Been excited when it finally came in the mail? Had he set it in the spot and proudly showed it off to his lovers? Rig would love to witness the sunny and happy disposition of the man who brought this room alive with color and warmth. Over the last week, Mason had shown small glimpses of the man he used to be before death fell like a dark cloak over him and his home, but they were fleeting. A slight smile, a shy look, but they were like flashes in a pan, there one second and gone the next, leaving Rig to wonder if he had really seen it or if it had been his own wishful thinking. In the 7 years since a dark cloak had been thrown over his own world, he hadn't met anyone who stirred something deep within him, as Mason had. Sure, he and Bobby shared many subs and lovers, and to say his life hadn't been fun and fulfilling these past few years would be a lie. Yet there was always something missing, something incomplete, and always just out of their grasp. He and Bobby knew what it was. While they loved each other without question, they were both nurturers, protectors, with an ingrown need to dominate. They knew their place within the other's life, were comfortable being at each other's side, but they were truly happy and fulfilled when they stood side by side with a boy at their feet between them. The first couple of years after Stephen died, they had no desire to bring another man into their lives or even into their play. But as time went on, the pain of loss, he couldn't really say it stopped hurting, perhaps became bearable was a better word. Eventually, he and Bobby began to enjoy some of the subs at the club, rare and sporadic at first, but with increasing frequency and need the last year or so. They were ready to find the missing part of the puzzle that was their lives. Rig moved to the window, pulling back the curtain just enough to view Mason as he kneeled next to a small flower bed near the porch, fussing with the plants, pulling out weeds. He was dressed in a pair of light blue shorts, white tank top, and flip-flops. His lean muscles flexed and rolled as he worked. His tanned skin and the red highlights in his hair shone in the bright morning sunshine. Mason was a beautiful man. But above that, he seemed to be a good and kind man, as well as a little quiet and shy. Rig had reacted to Mason strongly from the beginning. And at first, he thought it was simply his desire to help the distraught man. But now? Now as he stood watching Mason work, Mason's face, devoid of the deep frown that usually marred his brow, without the tight lines around his eyes and mouth, and without any immediate danger he had to protect Mason from, it hit Rig that he wanted Mason as that last piece to complete the puzzle. There was a certain strength of spirit in Mason, a strong resolve to put his feet on the floor each morning, pull his tired body from his bed, start his day, and take it one footstep, one action at a time. He had the fortitude that allowed the man to rise above the heartbreak and anguish and keep going, keep living. Rig was a patient man. He'd wait however long it took, but he wanted this man. He wanted him in his life and in his bed. For the first time in a very, very long time, he wanted a relationship with someone, besides Bobby, for more than just sex. "He's improving every day," Max said quietly, coming up to stand next to Rig. Rig released the curtain and stepped away from the window.
"It would appear so. I was just going to pour me another cup of coffee. Would you like some?"
"Sure." Max followed him into the kitchen and leaned against the counter. Rig pulled another mug from the cupboard, poured them each a cup, and handed one to Max.
"What time do we need to leave for the airport?"
After a week of daily counseling sessions with Mason, Max was convinced that Mason was on the right track towards healing. Mason had also agreed to continue therapy sessions with Max via internet chat until he could find a local therapist Mason was comfortable talking with about his grief and social anxiety disorder. Rig and Bobby were staying. In fact, they had extended their rental by a month. With the sale of the club to Blake and Ty, there was nothing pressing they needed to return to New York for.
"Three,"
Max said, and then blew into the mug before taking a tentative sip. "Mason seemed a little edgy when you told him you were leaving. You sure he's not going to relapse?" Rig asked. A small sliver of unease caused his hand to shake ever so slightly, and he clamped down on it, forcing himself to calm.
"Like I said before, nothing is guaranteed. Grieving is a personal and highly individual experience, and it takes time. Healing happens gradually. It can't be forced or hurried. And there is no normal timetable for grieving. Mason may start to feel better in weeks or months, or it could be years."
Max gave Rig a warm smile.
"I know you're worried about him, and I can hear your gears spinning from here. My only advice is be patient, be his friend, and just let the process of his grief unfold naturally and in his own time."
"Possibly years, huh?" Rig asked with a sigh.
"Yes, my friend, years. You know," Max said seriously, meeting Rig's eyes.
"He may not be who you hope he is once he heals. Right now he's a mess. And if I know you, and I think I do after all these years, you want to fix him, to take away his pain and grief, and mend his broken heart. He is the epitome of the underdog you are drawn to."
Rig started to open his mouth to protest, to tell Max that it was more than that. A feeling in his gut and his instincts were rarely wrong. But Max stopped him with a wave of his hand and a knowing look, and Rig snapped his mouth shut.
"I'm not saying your instincts are wrong," Max continued. "All I'm saying is that right now, Mason's needs outweigh yours and Bobby's. I do want you to find the right man for you and Bobby. You both deserve to be happy, and I know you will make some lucky sub very, very happy. One day. However, don't put all your hope in Mason just yet. He has a long way to go to heal, and he may not ever want to accept a new, or rather, two new masters."
Even as Max spoke the words, Rig knew they were true. Intellectually, he knew this. He was a smart man. He understood that flights of fancy and love at first sight were simply fairy tales. Logically, one simply did not start making forever plans and spouting words of undying love after only a week. It was ridiculous. Rig's gut and heart, however, were having no part of logic, intellect, or reason. They insisted Rig could help to heal Mason. They had no doubt in Mason, and were sure Rig could make Mason whole again.
"I know," Rig finally muttered.
"Mm-hmm."
The small sound was disbelieving. Rig took another gulp of his coffee, wincing as it burned his tongue and throat.
"So tell me what Bobby and I should be watching for."
He set his mug down on the countertop and leaned back on his hands.
"We already talked about the shock and disbelief, sadness, guilt, anger, fear, but grief often involves physical problems. Give me a call if you see an increase in fatigue, nausea, if he refuses to eat, or if you notice he's losing more.